Okay, so it's my great pleasure to speak to Professor Siddique today. He not only is so renowned in the world of agriculture, he's one of the most highly cited people in the world, but I really admire him for the work that he's done with international students, bringing them across here and, you know, just helping support them while they're in Australia and keeping his eye on the pulse, I'd say, worldwide in the world of agriculture. So it is a real honor for me to speak to him. Welcome, Professor Siddique.
Thank you, Erica.
So how did it come about that you came to Australia to study and do your PhD here?
I'm originally from a southern part of India, a state called Kerala, a beautiful tropical state. I did my undergraduate there in agriculture science and then went to New Delhi to do my master's in a prestigious central institute called Indian Agriculture Research Institute with a federal government fellowship. It really made a difference when you go to such place because India is a diverse country with different languages, different food habits. So I met many, many people from different parts of India. And there, it's only postgraduate program, master's and PhD. I completed my master's, and incidentally, I was the gold medalist for the master's. Then I joined PhD program for there. But I always wanted to go and study overseas to get that experience. And then I got an opportunity to do work in an international center called International Center for Agricultural Research in the Dry Areas, which was located in Aleppo in Syria. So I ditched my PhD, which was only for 1 month in New Delhi, and then I joined this wonderful international organization dealing with the dryland agriculture. But also I was fascinated with the dryland agricultural systems in Australia, which is the largest dryland human-inhabited country in the world. If you look at that, it is the driest human-inhabited. Yet, it has so much of resilience, so much of crop production happening. So from there, then I applied for scholarships, and I got the scholarship from the University of Western Australia to undertake my PhD program. That's how I came to Australia.
That's actually an amazing story because not a lot of people have kind of the Indian background, which often if you haven't been to India, you don't realize how diverse it is. And then you go to the Middle East, which is a completely different culture altogether. Then you come to Australia. That must have stood you in really good stead in your work here at UWA.
Certainly, it goes a lot more maturity at that age. It was much much younger age, but you meet with the people, you going away from home. Even when I was undergraduate, I was studying in a college and also in New Delhi, meeting with people with the different languages. India has got probably more than 15-20 languages and 500 dialects, and so English was the main language which was binding us all together, although I speak a bit of Hindi and my native language, which is called Malayalam, which is more even tougher. The Middle East story, I stayed there 1 year in Syria, but I traveled extensively to Lebanon, Cyprus, Jordan, Turkey, and so on to do with work. Again, traveling and meeting with the people gave more. You learn a lot from them, culture-wise, mm-hmm. scientific-wise, and also the food habit and so on. So it made me more adaptable to various environments.
That's fantastic. So where did your love for agriculture come from?
My family, my father, no more, he passed away in 2012. We have, I would say, medium to above medium, I would say, good farming in southern part of Kerala, largely coconut plantations, rice paddies, and other horticultural crops. So the father's income was coming from agriculture, so he used to go and manage that. As a child, we also go during harvest time and look at and spend time. And so there was always a passion. Then also I used to do small gardening in our backyard, and so I had always a passion for that. But like many other young people, everyone said, oh, you should go for medicine. So I worked hard for the plus two in Kerala, and then I narrowly missed for medicine for 6 marks. If I had 6 more marks, I would have got medicine. So I was very saddened. Then I joined for science, Bachelor of Science, and someone said, why are you wasting time? You are not very interested. So I met one guy who is already had a degree in agriculture science. He said, agriculture science is very good. So I simply then applied for that, and I got into Bachelor of Agriculture Science.
That's fantastic. So what do you think is the biggest lesson from your growing up years in India, do you think have prepared you most for your life here?
I think yes, well, not really fully prepared, but I used to participate in sports, pole vault and high jump and the hurdles, and also some of the extracurricular activities, leader of various factions within the in college and so on. I think, public speaking, then participating in sport activities, that extra bit was very important. It's not just about what you learn from the classrooms.
No.
Then wide reading about the various things about the global situation. And India is a very good country where you get a number of newspapers and so on, and that helped me. But coming to Syria and then coming to Australia and working with the farming community in Western Australia and other parts of Australia helped me to really understand the agricultural system. On the top of that, good research also really helped me.
Yes, because it's not only really the academic side, but I've seen your great sense of humor, which isn't always, working with farmers, they always have a good sense of humor. So I think that's a good testament to you as well, being able to adapt yourself in that way so you can really speak the language of the people.
Yeah, I think farming, interaction with the farming community, still I continue, or to a less extent, but otherwise I used to travel every week to the wheat belt of Western Australia, whether it is Geraldton to Esperon to Meriden, and have done trials and experiments in those places, so you understand. And then wide reading and working with other people helped me to learn the agricultural system. But it's not only an Australian agricultural system, but my extensive and intensive work in China over the last 50 years, now I do understand significant aspects of Chinese agriculture. Of course, collaboration with India continues. Then I have established collaborations in Africa. The traditional countries like Canada and US and Germany and the Middle East are still going on. So all in all, the global food system, and also when I became the UN FAO Special Ambassador for the International Year of the Pulses, that also helped me to connect with one of the leading organizations in the world, UN FAO, on food and nutritional security aspects.
Yeah, so when you arrived in Australia in the 80s, the country was not nearly as multicultural or used to other cultures as now. So especially in the wheat belt, you must have a few interesting stories about settling and working there. So would you mind sharing some of those moments with us?
Well, when I came, precisely we came in 1981, July 31st, on a very winterish day in the old Perth airport, and my supervisor at that time, late Professor Ralph Sedgley, he got somehow mixed up and he never turned up at the airport. So myself and wife, we just got married about a couple of months before that, and then no one there. So I had some money with me, and then I just went to a phone booth and got some change from a shop which was opened at the midnight in the airport, and then rang my supervisor. He said, where are you? You are not supposed to be here. I said, I'm here. So then he came in a little car and a Honda Civic and put all the bags. He could not even fit the bags there. Then stayed in a motel that night. And I think the journey started from there, going to do my PhD in Meriden, which is 300 kilometers east of Perth, and the resilience. A lot of interesting things with the farmers. The farmers first thought that, being a foreigner, he may not be able to communicate well to the farmers, and at least some people made the comment, he wouldn't be good in extension activities, but will be very good in research. But I think I proved them wrong. I can do both. And a good researcher should be able to communicate what they know. But the main thing is that you need to understand the farmer's interest first, and then listen to them carefully, analyze critically. If you don't know the answer, you then come back and give them the answer later. So there's a lot of interesting stories, but I can't remember any particular one at this stage, but I'll come back to you later.
That's good. So currently you're one of the most highly cited professors in the world. At the moment, I see that you have over 121,000 citations in your career. Could you ever have imagined that when you moved here?
No, when I came here to do a good PhD, and I never thought that I will stay here as well. The PhD work went well. This is the first ever PhD on chickpea in Australia. At that time, no one heard about chickpea. I had to get some seed from Eastern Australia, from one of the colleagues there. And now chickpea industry has reached a significantly whole in Australia, close to a $1 billion industry. I've also released many varieties of chickpea for Australian farmers. But in terms of science, one of my interesting things is I like to design experiments, and then I would like to write it up. Mm-hmm. And that's something that the young researchers should do that. So while writing, you read more about it, and then you don't really aim for being high cited, or you don't even aim for the citation, etc. But I think inevitably, if you do good research and if you do good science, if you publish in good journals, then it's likely that that will be picked up by other researchers in different parts of the world, and that's our citation. So it is good to be recognized, but again, I must admit that it's not all my work. When you look at all the publications with my PhD students, postdoctoral fellows, and also the international collaborators, so it has been a very interesting experience. And having been a director of the UW Institute of Agriculture for the last probably 13, 14 years, but also before that, the director of the Center for Legumes in Mediterranean Agriculture, I never stopped as research. So in other words, so you become a director, then you become mostly in a bureaucrat, but I like to continue reading at night and writing papers and designing experiments with the students. So that's a real passion for me, to come every day to UWA. You know, you got research, you got students, you got a bit of teaching, you got administration, various committees, contacts with the farmers, international community, interstate collaborators. It's a mixture of exciting things. I think I'm really lucky to be in this profession.
That sounds brilliant. So, Professor, they say that a prophet is not recognized in his own country, but that is not the case for you. So amongst other things, you've also been awarded a prestigious medal from the President of India. How has your career impacted other Indians or India's involvement in world agriculture?
So I've been involved with a number of collaborative projects with India, the Indian Council of Agricultural Research Institutions, various agricultural universities, and I would say I have been instrumental in bringing that ties with UWA. And then it's not only me, my colleagues from UWA has been participating. And that, if you look at over the last 20 years, has made a significant impact in terms of capacity building, right? Short-term training, PhD-trained Indian students, projects, Australia-India, for example, strategic research-funded projects, joint publications, and then organizing conferences and seminars of mutual interest. And exchange of academics between UWA and leading Indian institutions. So I've been instrumental in that. Mm-hmm. And I think I can say that I have contributed to some extent to India, being an ex-Indian, and then also at high-level meetings with, for example, I was with the delegation, the prime ministerial delegation, when Malcolm Turnbull was the Prime Minister. Yeah. I was one of the delegations representing the Group 8 universities. Then Australia-India Leadership Dialogue, I participated. I presented to Ministers of Education and Agriculture. Late last year, I went a special invitation by the Minister for Education of Australia, Mike Tian, think you have to get it right.
Yeah, you can just repeat it. Yeah.
And I think Mike Tehan. Is the education minister. So he specially invited me to organize a workshop. Entire workshop is at there. This is about how can we build research collaboration, excellence in research collaboration between India and Australia. Then I used agriculture as an example and showed that. So it is an exciting country to work.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it's different when you work with China versus India. You cannot use the same approach. But all in all, it has been very good.
Yeah. For me personally, as a migrant as well, when I look at your journey, I think it's really encouraging that if I look at you, I know that through hard work and determination, you can really make it. And you were West Australian of the Year in 2014. So talk us like through what that meant for you.
I think it was an exciting thing. I didn't know that I was nominated by people. So the process is you have to get nomination. And once the nomination went in and you were shortlisted, then it was shortlisted with three others, two medical. So total was three shortlisted from a large number, I don't know. And two were medical, and I was the only agricultural. And then you go for this function, which was attended by 800 people that those days in the Perth Convention Center. And we had a premier at that time. Then we had the treasurer. We also had the foreign affairs minister of Julie Bishop. Honorable Julie Bishop was in front of them. Then you're waiting. And then they show in the big screen the first nomination, second nomination, third nomination about their thing, and then someone come and announce the winner is, and then my name came, and my wife was next to me, and a few people in the same table, and then you have to go there and give a short speech. So although we were all told that you could be the winner, so I did prepare mentally, and so I just gave a speech, and it has been a fantastic. And we had many events where we had to promote Western Australia and how you achieved this in your profession. So I did go for various meetings, both within Perth and also country town, and addressed many young people, mainly using my example, how we served for Western Australia, and also how we promoted Western Australia internationally in my field, research and education, particularly in agriculture, and the work I have done with the farming community as well. So it has been very exciting day, and I still think it is one of the highlights of my life.
Yeah, and I must say, I'm glad you didn't make it into the medical profession. Finally, we beat the medical people. So you have been instrumental in opening doors to international students who wanted to study agriculture in Australia and at UWA in particular. This in turn has made a big impact on their home countries. Could you please share one of these success stories?
There are a number of them coming. I remember one young lady from Nepal. Her name is Renuka Shestra. So she did a PhD with me in mid-2000. So now she's a very high position in Nepal and doing wonderful work in the area of agriculture, particularly women empowerment. And there are a number of students occupying very significant positions, for example, in Iran, in Zambia, South Africa, in Pakistan, and India, and China also. China, a number of students are in positions as professors and so on. So what it is that the training we have given at UWA then moved into various other countries, and then there is a group of people training them. For example, the universities where we worked in China, some of those students are now going into another university, and then now I can see second generation, third generation collaboration occurring between us, UWA, and I'm involved in many, and that's really helping. And they are doing some extremely good research, teaching, etc. So it's really pleasing to see that the students you bring, train them or work with them, and then they go and mature themselves. Some fantastic students in Sri Lanka, a lot in Pakistan, and a number of them in countries like Iraq. Just recently, last year, a young lady, she did her PhD in engineering with colleagues and myself, and she's now in one of the top universities in Baghdad and doing good research and teaching there.
Great. So you mentioned China and that you have many ties to other universities worldwide. So how have these universities responded to COVID-19 and how do you see them moving forward?
Yes, it's a very difficult situation. So take, for example, in China, many of the universities I'm collaborating haven't had any contact teaching, but the research is continuing. So they haven't stopped the research. Only thing what we can't do at the moment, we can't travel both ways. And some of the workshops and conferences we have planned for this year will not take because of the COVID. Yes, it has affected financially, but also mentally, people have been affected. But I think many of them are coping very well through online program, focusing on research. So for myself, now I'm focusing mostly on writing up all the papers and encouraging the students to write and focus because there's no more travel happening.
Yeah.
And we will get through this this very well. And the universities has got a significant role to play. For example, now we will have a lot of unemployment to every country. So it's time for people to come and
train
either short-term courses or even second cycle or third cycle programs. And we will come out of that. And of course, many universities are involved in developing vaccine for the COVID, both in Australia and China. In terms of food and nutritional security, it has been really good because the global production of food last year, whether it is grain or whatever, has been fantastic. So we haven't really seen starvation or real riots because of the lack of food. But having said that, the government should give a lot of emphasis on food production, the coming season, food distribution, affordability. Those are the things we need to look. Otherwise, we could have, especially the vulnerable community, low-income group, whether it is in Australia, although we are lucky here in other countries. So the universities has got a significant role in terms of addressing the COVID situation post in a totality.
Yeah, that's definitely a big concern for a lot of people.
Exactly.
Is the food security. But I normally finish my show with the two same questions, and it's kind of a fun way of ending it. The one is like, which word in your language did you bring with you that you still hold on to, kind of like that gets you through?
A happiness, which is in my language, Malayalam, is a sandosham. So happiness is something which I would like to bring. You just, every day I say to my students, it's a yo-yo. You got some ups and downs. What you have to do is that manage in such a way. In general, you will have some negatives, but then you will have some positives. Try to improve that positiveness. And when you go home after a day, try to achieve certain things, and some things you cannot achieve, and that is the fact. So try to be positive, try to be happy. That's something which I like to bring. And it has got a lot of meaning, you know, happiness. That is something which we need to work towards happiness.
Fantastic. And which English word, Australian English word, did you adopt when you arrived here?
I think fair dinkum, which is give a chance to everyone. So this is in particular migrants, you know, there is a tendency. You asked me when I came, there were only 700,000 people in Perth. Today it is over 2 million people. And the people from Kerala, there were only probably 25 or 30. Today it could be about 15,000. And there's more than about 80, probably 90,000 Indians in Perth. Those days it was not there. So it is good to see that, the migration, it's just to see that how resilient we bring, the type of food people bring, the restaurants, you go to a gourmet, various things. Those days when we wanted to buy a kilo of rice, and if you buy two packets in Coles or somewhere, people look at it. What you do? Now you can take a 50 kilo bag on your back, and that much of plenty of things are coming from internationally, and the type of food, vegetables, the fruits you find is fantastic, and the restaurants. So The migrants definitely has contributed, not only now, over the last 100 years, continue to contribute. So people coming here, they need to really work hard and look forward. And this is a wonderful country where the opportunities are there. Yes, there are difficulties during the journey, not all smooth sailing, but consistently give education to your children, whatever, it doesn't matter. Then the independence and resilience needs to be built into it.
Well, thank you very much for those wise words and all the other. It's been lovely to really interview you again.
Thanks. Thank you, Erica. Thank you. I hope you can edit and...
Oh, that was great.